Welcome everyone into this interview where you'll get to hear directly from the Kitsumon team. Kitsumon is bringing together multiple gaming genres to appeal both to the casual player and to the competitive MOBA player. Balthazar reviewed this NFT gaming project a while back, and it was awesome to see when published that the team took everything to heart, took our feedback, and have been consistently improving things over time. So perhaps if you weren't sold on the project back then, this will be a great second look at the game. So stay tuned for this interview. Welcome everybody to the Balthazar podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in on YouTube and our podcast platforms. Today we have some special guests here from Kitsumon. I'm excited for this one. We covered your guys' game a few weeks ago now, and we're doing a follow-up interview, learning a little bit more about the game. So today we have Sanjay and James. So I'll just start off with each of you. Just tell me a little bit about who you are, what's your role within this team. Sanjay, why don't you kick us off?
I'm Sanjay, I'm Chief Technical Officer in Kitsumon, and I basically handle all of development with obviously James's help. And yeah, we're currently working on the game.
Sweet. And then James, go ahead and intro yourself as well.
Sure. I'm James, I'm the CEO and the other co-founder along with Sanjay. I manage the business on the day-to-day operations, and when possible, try to get some coding in. But that's kind of not happening as much in these days as it used to. But yeah.
Sweet. Well, thank you guys for joining me. And maybe someone missed the research report or the video we did, so I'd love to just hear a little bit about the game. I know on our research report, you guys described yourselves as Pokemon, a little bit Animal Crossing, Axie, League of Legends. Like, these are the inspirations. So how do you guys bring all those together in one game? Like, how do you pitch this to gamers? What type of gamer would enjoy Kitsumon, you think?
Yeah, it's when we first started this, people kind of thought we was biting off a little bit more than we can chew, essentially trying to build two quite large game styles themselves, being a MOBA and a open world RPG. But when we actually get into discussions with people and actually start to explain the game, people start to see what we're trying to do. As I said, the three different styles of games, but we try to underpin them and link them all together through the NFTs and the characters and the utility. So in terms of people who would want to play the game, I always think of people like Sanjay, so people who love kind of these open world RPG games, people who have a... I guess we've tried to do this and cater for both, well, multiple styles of gamers. So people who want to come in and casually game, we've kind of tailored the MOBA game to that. While people can play this and play this over long periods of time, it's kind of more of our casual gaming offering. Whereas the professions has really grown from what we first imagined, and now it's a much more larger open world RPG. So people who had, you know, kind of experience or childhoods growing up in, you know, RuneScape, World of Warcraft, this professions RPG game is much more kind of like that style of game now. So yeah, they're the two kind of game offerings. I don't know if you have anything to add on that, Sanjay.
Yeah, so the professions is kind of similar to what you'd think of, let's say, Skyrim being multiplayer or something like Elder Scrolls Online. So yeah, I think the type of gameplay that we're trying to attract is the RPG players for the professions, but mainly for the mobile players, it's the competitive esports players.
Got it. So do you think there is a big enough content for both those audience? I mean, I always kind of joke because my wife is the, you know, casual, I'm going to play the Nintendo games, Animal Crossing. Maybe her competitive game is like, I'll jump into Mario or Breath of the Wild, right? But she's not going to be playing League of Legends or these big MOBAs, right? So is there enough for her and for me who does love being that competitive player?
So I think definitely if your wife was a more of a Farmville type of person and she loved those games, then in the professions, she would be able to carry out the farming. But as well as in the professions, she'd be also be able to carry out player versus player or player versus monster or environment, as they call it. Whereas you, if you are a more competitive person and you wanted to like player versus player and be recognized, you'd be doing the MOBA, which is mostly the PvP and the esports side of things.
Got it. So she can get all my upgrades for me, and then I'll get all the glory. Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly, yeah.
Sounds great. Sounds like a good team we could combine together. I want to know a little bit more about the MOBA aspect, especially you guys talked about the competition in the esports. And I was really curious when you guys brought in this idea of, hey, you're going to be leveling up your NFTs. You're going to be able to get some boosts and then bring them into the MOBA side of things, which sounds like a cool experience. But then I also thought about, you know, I played League of Legends for a long time. I'm like, okay, how does this work if my opponent on the other side of mid lane has these upgrades, you know, from, you know, minute zero of the game? Like, how am I supposed to compete in that? You know, if someone else is three levels up on me as we start the MOBA, that sounds like a challenging task just to even get started in the game. I feel like I'm going to get crushed, right? So how does that work? How do you balance those types of things? What is that going to look like?
So when Yukitsu is born, it's born with a specific stealth stats, and these are very basic. I mean, if you enter Yukitsu in a MOBA and it's just been born, it's not going to be that good. But if you do play the professions game in our Kitsumon ecosystem, and then you manage to level Yukitsu up through items from professions, then it can have a chance of competing. So we expect people to actually go into the professions game and try to level their Kitsus up and then play in the MOBA, so they are actually at that level where they can compete. Eventually, people would have like the same maximum stats. So then you'd see an advantage. You wouldn't see advantage over people that are breeding just really strong Kitsus, because they won't be really stronger from birth. People would have to play the professions to make them really strong.
Got it. So is it kind of the idea of like, okay, maybe I start out in game of League of Legends or Heroes of the Storm. I start with an account level one and I have to work my way up to unlock champions, unlock maybe, you know, back in the day you had to unlock your runes in League of Legends. Is that kind of the similar idea? Is like, okay, maybe not right away you're strong, but eventually everyone's going to get to the same level if they play
enough? Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
And then James, how about for you? How do you see that evolving into esports in that possible, like, is there going to be imbalance, or do you think, hey, all these esports teams are going to have the same amount of power, and so, you know, if Fnatic is going against, you know, Misfits, it's still a fair fight?
Yeah, with the MOBA, we've kind of, again, with the Kitsus, the way that they've been designed, we haven't designed them in a way that one Kitsu is a top trump. So we don't, you know, kind of foresee teams or esports teams where there's one person carrying the rest of them. You know, we've designed the stats and the abilities of the Kitsus, but you really do have to build a rounded battle team. So that is going to be people who are, you know, as Sanjay said, playing professions to level up, you know, different kind of Kitsus, whether they're kind of, you know, more defensive or healing or attack types, and trying to actually build their teams that have a good all-round, you know, level of statistics across the board. So, yeah, I mean, these kind of the way that we see the esports side, we've always kind of, you know, envisioned this. While we don't expect it to be, you know, pay to win, we do kind of expect, you know, eventually maybe the esports teams will come in and provide a demand for, you know, leveled up Kitsus and high powered Kitsus. But that is just, you know, part and parcel of the game. And it's something that does, you know, provide a benefit to the other styles of players, or people who are, you know, concentrating solely on, you know, the breeding mechanic, for example. We do have a lot of people in our Discord and, you know, in our groups that are kind of looking at these, you know, especially on the testnet, some of our testers are kind of trying to deduce the best way of you know, becoming, you know, producing these Kitsus with desirable traits and desirable attacks. So it's kind of what we've always imagined Kitsumon to be, kind of this ecosystem of different players who are playing the different game styles and are providing, you know, assets and characters to other people who want to focus on certain areas.
That sounds cool. It sounds almost like a symbiotic relationship. You have those who are wanting to grow and breed and create maybe some of those Kitsus that have different strategies or different unique traits, and then other players that might see that and say, hey, that will actually fit perfectly with my team. Let me grab that and combine it together. And I think that's kind of a cool way to think about it. You did mention pay to win, and even though you're saying, hey, you know, we don't see this as becoming pay to win, I think a lot of people in the Web 2 space have just accused all Web 3 games of being pay to win. So I'm curious, how do you guys, have you seen that accusation in this space as well from the Web 2 gamers who don't want to get into NFT gaming? And what is your response to those types of players?
So I think we see it across a lot of the crypto games, people, you know, saying that they can come in and, be able to buy these, you know, buy high powered, not necessarily kits to use, but buy the, you know, the upgraded versions, or especially in some of the land, you know, like the land-based games where people are only solely wanting to buy, you know, the premium lands. And I think you can, as a, you know, developing a game, you can try to put, you know, as many of the, you know, mechanics in place to try and stop this from happening, but I don't think you'll ever fully stomp it out. But that said, I think we've tried to approach it in a way that even if you are coming at a low level, you know, after people have been playing the game for a while, that you can still get to a point of achieving that through free gameplay or yeah, some supported purchases. But we still do believe that the game is designed in a way that allows you to get to that level of other people who have been potentially playing it longer, compared to other games where you might just, you know, be throwing money at it to be the best.
Yeah, and even the funny thing is, even with that accusation, right, a lot of Web2 gamers have done this for ages. Well, they'll just buy a fully leveled account, or, you know, find that black market trading on, you know, the WoW site or something like that. So it definitely does go both ways, right?
Yeah, and I think this is like kind of was the early incarnation of some of these, you know, crypto or internet-based economies. Like people were buying and selling, you know, World of Warcraft accounts back in the day, and RuneScape accounts, or you was having people farming constantly on RuneScape just to, you know, with bots to try and level up their accounts. I think it was just an early progression of where we are today. And like I said, I don't really think you're ever going to stomp it out completely. It's just trying to be able to develop the game in a way that it doesn't ruin the gameplay for new people, because you always want to be able to attract you know, new players into the systems.
Yeah, I love that. Makes a lot of sense. I want to know from you guys, I was really interested in reading through the breeding aspect. I think one of the quotes was, there were 17 trillion possible outcomes. So first I want to know, how does that work? How is there 17 trillion? And then maybe what are some lessons you guys have learned watching other NFT games before you about the breeding systems, and how have you crafted yours from learning some of those lessons maybe?
Well, the 17 trillion outcomes came from, I think it was a crazy number. Like there was 11 DNA components and there's like 44 different genes. So it was something like 11 to the power of 44. Don't quote me on that, but I will get the proper formula soon. So sorry, could you repeat your question, Luke?
Yeah, I just want to know, like, have you guys watched other games before you? You know, I think the most historic one that everyone has looked at, you know, is, Axie. And hey, there was nothing to really help through the inflation, and people just kept breeding and breeding and breeding. So, you know, have you watched Axie? Have you watched Pig Axie? Have you watched really any other games, either positive or negative examples that maybe have helped you craft your own breeding system?
Yes. Yeah, so we did look and evaluate the other kind of breeding system games, like say Axie and their, you know, their Love Potion. I mean, we took a kind of a, we took two courses of action to try and be fundamentally different to this ever-growing population. So unlike Axie, where you're kind of, you've got the SLP token, Kitsumon or us as a company are the exclusive sellers of said potions, and they are done in increasing batch prices. You know, that said, once it gets to the higher batch prices for breeding, we're not foreseeing people to stop breeding completely, but there's obviously a much higher associated cost with breeding. So at that point, we are expecting to see people, you know, in demand of these hybrids to kind of justify that purchase price. But as well as that, what we also did is, again, another system that we designed to combat this was the use of the passive abilities. So while Kitsu's, that, you know, their main stats are related to the MOBA, what we did is we added additional utility to these entities in the form of their passive abilities, which means that Kitsu's then have an ability or a use case within side of the professions. And the way that we designed this is that essentially you'd be able to burn your Kitsu or send your Kitsu to a burn address in order to unlock the passive abilities inside of the MOBA. So one example being is that a Kitsu might have a passive ability that increases farming output or reduces risk to disease of plants or animals. And then by taking them kitsus that have maybe bad battle stats, but providing their utility in a second part of the game, adds a second amount of demand for that kitsu. As well as the actual mechanic of being burning actually locks that kitsu out of supply. So we've tried to, add sinks where possible for a potentially ever-growing supply of kitsus, just like in humans die, right? But in Axie, there's no real concept of, of the Axies kind of going out of circulation, apart from people just choosing to burn them. We've added these mechanics to try and kind of balance out that, as you say, that increasing population supply.
Just to add to that, we also do have a breed time. So let's say a kitsu breeds with another kitsu and they breed one egg. Both of the kitsus that bred would actually be on a cooldown timer. And this cooldown timer increases with every consecutive breed. So eventually the breed time will get too much and then people would have to wait a long time to rebreed with the same kitsu. So this kind of slows down the breeding as well.
Sounds like good mechanics to help some of that inflation. And I'm curious, have you guys seen games that have taken some of these concepts and have already implemented them and are successful? Or do you guys feel like you're kind of on the maybe frontier of this space and these are all new concepts that Kitsumon is implementing here?
I'm not sure about potion batch prices. It's kind of a straightforward concept, really, just modifying the SLP proposition. But in terms of the secondary passive abilities, I think we're probably one of the only people doing this. But this comes back to our kind of philosophy that good crypto games, or the next wave of crypto games, are going to be heavily dependent on token utility or NFT utility, should I say. And that's what we're constantly trying to do, constantly building more and more utility into the kitsus so that they have, like say, multiple use cases rather than just having one option of battling and that's it. And I think any game in the next round of or next wave of play to earn or crypto games, having token utility is going to be one of the most important things for the long run. Just because, as you say, you see Axie Infinity's got an inflation problem, and it's just because there's nothing else you can do in Axie apart from battle and breed. And if they're the only two mechanics, then there's inevitably going to be an oversupply of NFTs in the system.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of tokens that have been printed and, kind of down the road, everyone realizes, oh, there's nothing I can actually do with them, right? Utility is so important because if there's nothing to do with them, well, I guess my only thing to do is to sell them on the market. And so everyone else does the same. So maybe this would be a good time. Just talk to me about your guys' tokens. I know that you guys have two tokens, one outside of the game and one that's permanently in game, right? That's not a crypto token as far as I understand. So talk me through that system and why choose that system over maybe some of the other games that have chosen a two crypto token system.
So the two tokens you're talking about are the KMC token, which is our ERC20 utility token, and the Candy in-game token. So starting with the KMC, again, we are firm believers that, me and Sanjay have been involved in crypto for quite a while. We see all these projects with kind of tokens, not necessarily just GameFi projects, but, tokens across the board, but literally just don't have any value apart from the ability there for the projects to raise. What we've designed KMC is to be purely a utility token. And thankfully, touch wood, the lawyers agreed with us on that one. So what you can actually do with KMC is it is the sole currency for buying breeding potions. That's one of the main uses for this. And as you said, being able to buy the in-game candy currency. And the reason why we went for this two token approach, two reasons really. We didn't want the underlying crypto token, if it was to ever become super valuable, to affect the type of gameplay within inside of the game. So that you know, for example, if it was to shoot up in price, then you know, it could in adversely affect the people's, you know, experience within the game, because all of a sudden everything then in the game is super expensive, and then you fall back to this you know, mentality of, well, I've got more money, so therefore I'm going to be able to afford the better items, the better things, and just be able to dominate the game. So we have Candy, which is a fixed price. It's always going to be a fixed price. And the way that we've kind of come to value this is, again, inside of the professions, what we are going to, as we said, Candy is going to be the sole currency for inside of the professions. And then the way that we've been pricing this, or we are going to price this, is we're going to be using Chainlink's price oracles for certain commodities within inside of the game. And then commodities are going to be precious metals. And then what we've managed to do, or what we'll be doing, is then pricing the other commodities of inside of the game relative to that. So, for example, if we know how much an ounce of gold is going to be from a Chainlink oracle, we can then, in comparison, price other things within the game. So, for example, we then go and research the price of wheat per ton, or the price of fish per ton, and have all of the items within the game, you know, relatively priced to that, rather than just coming up with some, you know, wacky internal, you know, pricing system. The second reason for wanting to use Candy within inside of the game is to, as part of like our, I guess like our mission statement, to make the game as you know, accessible as possible. And one of the issues with crypto and mobile gaming is that obviously you're kind of at the whim of in-app stores such as Apple and you know, Google Play, where you need to have a currency that is consumable within inside of the game. So by using Candy, which is, you know, it's not being able to be taken out of the game, you're only able to consume it within the game. It allows us to be able to go into these stores and not have to worry too much about the regulations and their rules, as long as we kind of, it's quite, you know, straightforward how to, you know, plan and build an in-game currency that adheres to these. And if you can take out the crypto complexity, then you can just build like a standard game with these virtual currencies, but you know, still have the benefit of the underlying blockchain and the you know, the crypto aspect outside of it. So that was the kind of reasoning for wanting to use these two currencies, and yeah, the reason why we've designed them the way that we have.
Got it. Yeah, thank you for the explanation. I'm curious, what do you say to a Web3 gamer that looks at that and says, "Oh, that token isn't, you know, able to take out of the game. How am I supposed to extract for real world value? How am I supposed to play and earn?" Or is that part of the intention, in that the people aren't coming in and just looking to, you know, earn some token and sell it off on the market?
Well, again, it's kind of the principle and the philosophy that we're wanting to make a game that is fun to play, not just something where we expect people to sit there and farm, you know, farm themselves out for, you know, days and weeks on end just to try and make money. Because, yeah, it worked for Axie, but I don't think it's a long-term viable solution. I mean, Axie's already starting to see problems with, you know, their kind of model of this. And yeah, I mean, you can still earn, right? If you are wanting to play the game and you're wanting to be, you know, the best character, and you want to be able to level up your kitsus, you're going to need to have Candy, and you are going to be able to earn Candy within the game. And you will be able to level up kitsus, you'll be able to build buildings, you'll be able to improve your land, and then you'll be able to take them NFT assets out of the game and sell them. You know, again, if there's a demand there for kitsus, there's a demand there for land, you are still going to be able to earn from the game, but just not maybe directly from the in-game currency. But that said, by holding KMC or using KMC and having KMC as a utility token, again, we're going to see people want to use that token if the game is popular. So, you know, if they are going to, people are going to need to buy potions, they're going to want to buy things on the marketplace, they are going to need to have KMC from there, and they are going to have to be able to buy it. And if people are holding KMC from this, or they've earned KMC from selling their NFT assets, and then the price of KMC goes up, then they are still going to be inevitably earning money from the game, just, you know, a different way around doing it, really.
Yeah, I love that philosophy and value. I think that's a really wise one. I think we've all seen that play to earn really isn't sustainable. And if you're only there to earn, then eventually that thing is either going to collapse, or people are going to realize, oh, the game isn't actually that fun, and I was just here for the money. And so I like that fact of, hey, we need to build a good game, And if you want to, you know, extract value later down the road, that's fine, but that shouldn't be the main goal, right? And Sanjay, I'm curious from your point of view, how do you think that's going to shift over the next, you know, year or two with these new additions of play to earn games, or some people calling them play and earn games, or just NFT games? Do you think we can actually shift this narrative of, hey, we can actually play these games for fun and all this blockchain stuff is just a bonus rather than I'm here to personally just make money?
Yeah, definitely. I think most of the players that are playing the game are playing it for fun, and then the additional income is like, okay, I'm playing it. Well, I've spent like 1 or 2 hours playing it. Then I want to like maybe get something out of it. And yeah, if it's a blockchain game, then they can get something out of it instantly by getting an asset on Kitsumon. Then they can make it into an NFT and sell it within the store. I don't think it would widely change. Most people playing play to earn are most likely playing it to earn.
Is part of that though just because the games aren't fun enough to attract the Web2 gamer who doesn't care about earning as much?
Well, most of these play to earn games that I've seen are battling pets. I mean, you can have fun with this, but you can have fun for so long and then you're just going to get bored. And then you're just going to be doing it as a chore that you want to earn. Whereas I've seen some of these crypto games, these Web3 games, which are actually starting to build open worlds. And open world is just a whole new possibility where the users can play for hours or months or years and still have fun. So, yeah. I think it's kind of changing where these battle games are dying down and these open world games are really, really coming out there, these RPGs.
Yeah, I'm definitely more excited for a few months from now. I feel like a lot of these games are starting to launch some betas or alphas of, you know, a little bit more than just the web browser games that you've been talking about. So yeah, lots of exciting things, including Kitsumon. I want to jump in a little bit to the Balthazar research report, though, because, you know, I think the Kitsumon score was a little bit lower maybe than you guys expected, or I don't know how you guys felt about it when you guys saw it, but it's always interesting doing a follow-up interview with a slightly lower score, because you never know, oh man, like, what is the response going to be? Are they angry? Are they upset? Are they just writing it off, and who cares? But what I've appreciated about you guys and the team from what I've seen from the outside is that you guys have actually taken it to heart and say, hey, this is good feedback for us. Let us use this to improve things from here. So yeah, just walk me through what was like the initial reaction there, and then how did you guys use that information?
Well, I think no one likes to have criticism, right? But I think it's a refreshing thing to have in the industry where everyone usually is like kind of crypto bros and they're all just sitting around kind of blowing smoke up each other's asses kind of a little bit to, you know, make everyone feel better and think that they've got the, you know, the best game or best project out there. So actually, you know, what you guys do and on your research, I think it's kind of refreshing to actually give people a real kind of, you know, a truth, you know, a kind of an honest opinion. And I think that then, you know, it depends on the project and or the game to then how they want to react to that. They could, you know, go out and start, you know, these guys this and these guys that, they don't know what they're talking about, but it's how else do you ever improve unless you get honest feedback and take it on board and you know, change what you're doing. And you know, when you're involved in a project, you kind of always, you're so close to it and you've got your head always so inside the game and you know everything about it that you sometimes lose perspective of what's going on the outside and how other people perceive the game. So when you can actually have someone come in with a fresh pair of eyes and actually, you know, give you an honest kind of opinion on something, it's I think it's always valuable. I mean, the closest thing I can ever compare it to is kind of in, you know, going back to what I know best of web development is, it's, I always, when I have new people, you know, joining teams, and I always like them to, you know, give a code review of the project and actually, you know, get their thoughts and their feelings about how the project or the code base has been put together, because, you know, the same principle, you're constantly coding something and you think that you're writing the best code, but then someone else comes in and they're like, hey, wait a minute, why have you done this like this? Why have you done this like this? You should, you know, you could have you thought about doing it like that? And you're like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't even ever think of that as a possibility, just because you kind of so tunnel visioned in what you're already producing. So, I mean, yeah, there were some things I think that maybe were lost in translation from what was in our white paper to what was reviewed. But the good thing is that we would have never noticed that. And, you know, we took the steps to kind of correct it, whether it was in the white paper or our kind of approach to social media. So And the things that have come out of that have been benefits. So, you know, us, you know, narrowing down our social media focus means that, you know, we're now producing a much higher level of content for the platforms that we're, you know, focusing on. The move to Discord has really allowed us to have a lot more in-depth conversations with users and bringing all the users into one place rather than having like sub, you know, language communities. So I think, you know, all in all, you know, yeah, the score was probably not a 10 out of 10, but it's always good to get a score or get some feedback and then show progression in what you're doing.
Yeah, I think what you're saying right there is so important because I hope people understand that these scores are just a snapshot in time, right, of the practice. This is not saying this is what it is permanently, especially because these are all upcoming games, right? They're not even released yet, so who knows what the final product can actually look like. Here's just the score of what things look like as of right now. And I think more important than the actual score itself is how does the team respond to it, right? It's exactly what you're saying. It doesn't matter if it's a high or low score. It's what do we do with that information? What do we do with that third-party view that is saying, hey, here's how we're viewing it, and to maybe even if that even that's just something as simple as, hey, we need to improve communication because this was a misunderstanding. That is still an important thing, right? So I think that's an awesome response by you guys. I really appreciate that. Sanjay, anything you want to add into there about your response or how things have changed for you maybe?
I think it's very good that we get feedback. We don't seem to get enough bad feedback. So yeah, really, really thank you for that feedback. We did take most of it on board in the new UIs as well. So yeah, we should be releasing that very soon.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited for that. Excited for all updates. And as we kind of wrap up today, I want to hear a little bit. I think one of the things that was missing from the white paper, or at least in the research score got a little bit lower here, was about the team, because there was some difficulty finding out about the team. So I just want to give you guys a chance. Tell me about your team. Tell me why you guys are so awesome. Hype up the team a little bit. Who's all on it? And you don't have to go through every member, but give us some highlights maybe here.
Yeah, sure. So I think, yeah, that was one of the points I think that me and Sanjay were a bit contested about was the review of the team. So, I mean, mine and Sanjay's background, you know, especially about the comments to do with, you know, whether we have the experience to run like high level or, you know, scalable systems. Me and Sanjay both come from a kind of a high quality engineering background, I would say. So we've both had experience in building layer one protocols in the past, which is where me and Sanjay initially met each other. When we was doing that, we, you know, we developed a new consensus algorithm that was actually under patent as well. And so it's kind of a new novel development in the space. And then from there, we've gone on to work on you know, a variety of fintech projects. Fintech crypto-based projects, which again, in terms of having like kind of a high level capacity of users on the system, is something that's quite important for there, you know, trying to get to the point of FCA regulation. When I was working at Mode, you know, they take the ability to design and develop these backend systems very seriously, which was what I was in charge of. So I think me and Sanjay both probably undersold ourselves probably on the technical aspect of it. For the other team members, you know, yeah, there was not much information about them on the website because we like to give people the option of whether or not they want to disclose, you know, who they are, what they are, and their involvement on the project. So, and also how we structure the team, but we do have a lot of offshore developers working for us, you know, through partner companies, whether that's Ada or our Croatian team or our Bulgarian team who manage our DevOps. But I think the most important thing about our team is the passion that we all have, whether that is for gaming or whether that's for crypto, you know, everything that we're doing, we're working, you know, working 12-hour day sometimes to try and build and develop this game. And, you know, we're not necessarily doing it for the fame or the glory. We're doing it because we all are, you know, kind of very committed to the idea of what we're trying to build here at Kitsimon. So I think, you know, when you have people who are generally, you know, genuinely believe in the project and not just doing it to make a quick buck, I think you'll always get a much higher level quality of game. And then, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, especially over a website or white paper, right? It's hard to communicate passion. It's hard to communicate the heart behind it as well. So thank you for adding that in, because I think that is very important. Not that you just have skills, but you care about what you're doing. And I think that's pretty amazing. So Sanjay, anything else you'd want to highlight about the team?
Yeah, I do want to add that this new UI updates will also include the team pages information. So we have took that onto onboard as well. So you'd be able to go and click on our LinkedIns or anything that you want to view about us.
Perfect. Sounds good. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as you guys said, maybe it's, you know, up to every single person on the team. And some people, you know, have specific reasons maybe not to disclose all their information. But I think so many people have been burned in this space by projects that are anonymous or just haven't said anything. And so I think that's more of the, so the concern of like, hey, where you can be transparent, let's be transparent. So I appreciate you adding that, Sanjay. I think that's an excellent step and will help people get more confidence in the project. I'm curious, as the maybe last question, since we got both of you here, I want to know personally, each of you, what are you most excited for in the next, you know, 3 months upcoming for Kitsumon? What's on your brains or what's something that could be exciting to a gamer looking forward to you guys in your release?
Two things that I have. We're gotten to the point now where we're finally going to release Breeding into the production mainnet. We've had our testnet release for some time now, and as Sanjay was mentioning, we kind of took the approach to redesign a lot of the UIs based on your feedback and also based on market timing. You know, when we were ready to release the production release last time, kind of caught the bad end of the you know, the market drop thanks to you know, Terra Luna and all them guys. So one thing we're looking forward to is definitely the release of production Breeding in the upcoming weeks, with the release of the rest of the UI changes that we have been worked, as well as the upcoming land sale for professions. You know, we've got some quite cool launch pads and partners for that. And we're kind of looking forward to releasing that information. People who have been following us will probably see there's been a big increase of articles coming out on Medium relating to professions and relating to like the land biomes themselves. So I think people who know us, you know what our kind of like our operating style is. We like to kind of build things up through content and then release things. So that's going to be quite interesting, I think, once we announce the full details of the land sale.
Awesome. Exciting stuff. Sanjay, what would your maybe
I think shortly coming after that is going to be a alpha test of the professions gameplay. So people should be really looking out for that. It is going to be on an open world and it is going to be multiplayer. So yeah.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Let me know when you guys have stuff out. I'll give it a try. It sounds awesome to me. Any place you guys would point as they're listening or watching on YouTube, where they would join your community, where would you point them first?
The main community is now active in Discord, so you can visit our website to get the Discord links or our link trees. But yeah, the main place is on Discord, so if you want to come and join us, you can come and say hello. Everyone's in there from the old Telegram days, and all of the other language communities are there as well, so it's kind of a very welcoming and open place. So yeah, you can come and join us on Discord, or you can come and say hello on Twitter as well. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today, and excited to see what's ahead for you guys. Good luck to your team, and we'll keep track with any updates, so feel free to reach out anytime, and we'll keep track of what's going on at Kitsumon.
Thank you, Luke.
Great. Thank you, Luke.
Well, that's going to be it for today's interview. I hope this was helpful, giving you greater insight to this project to see if you want to end up playing this NFT game. And as always, feel free to check out Balthazar's website, as we have so many great products coming out to help NFT gamers like you, including our research launchpad and more coming soon. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'll see you at one of these other videos next to me. And if you're on our podcast platform, stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you, gracias, salamat, for tuning in.